And welcome to Arguing the Toss from GameIndustry.com. I'm Shella.
And I'm Drew, and together we're arguing about the things that really matter in games.
We are indeed. It is episode 3, I believe.
It is.
We've got my numbers right. Mm-hmm. And this episode we are comparing two games that always get compared, and I think justly so.
Yeah.
And that is Uncharted and Tomb Raider. I mean, basically, they're both kind of Indiana Jones as game.
Yeah.
And pretty much share the formula which was laid down by Tomb Raider and then kind of adopted and improved upon by Uncharted. I guess the basic similarities is that you're looking for treasure, and then you shoot some bad guys. There are lots of exotic locations. There are some puzzles and some set pieces, and that's pretty much the format, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, absolutely. They're obviously both, you know, shooty action adventure games. Are about, they're all about some ancient artifact with some magical power. And what I find about both of them, going back to the sort of Indiana Jones thing that you mentioned, which obviously everybody mentioned because those games are, I mean, not specifically Indiana Jones, although, yeah, kind of specifically, but those kind of adventure serials and...
I think Tomb Raider, pretty much she was Indiana Jones until someone said, let's make it a woman.
But what I find about both of them as well, and sort of especially the new Tomb Raider, is that, like Indiana Jones, they hang a lot of their appeal on, they kind of want you to like the protagonists. It's for different reasons, but it's very sort of focused on the character, and both, they're very much like Indiana Jones in that sense, particularly Uncharted, which wants you to go along with Drake straight away.
Which leads really neatly onto my first sort of question, really, is, you know, just comparing the two characters, basically.
Yep.
And I suppose Lara's quite an interesting one because she's changed so much over the years.
Yeah, through two reboots.
So let's talk a little bit about Lara, basically.
Okay.
What's your take on the new Lara versus the old Lara and versus Drake?
Well, I mean, I think so. One of the most fundamental differences between Uncharted and Tomb Raider is the way they try to sell you on the protagonist, particularly in the new Tomb Raider. The thing about the new Lara, she's not specifically this, but she feels kind of, in the first game, she feels kind of like an archaeology student on her gap year or something. She's not a fighter.
Yeah.
The game sells itself as this sort of journey where she's forged into Lara that we're familiar with. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, she gets dropped into this, you know, survival situation and she's got to learn how to fight or die, basically. And that's...
I wasn't really convinced by the arc, I have to say.
Exactly. It's a really sort of cool idea and approach. She's almost sort of a direct counterpoint to Nathan Drake, who is when you start Uncharted, he's already all about bravado and you know, adventurousness, and he likes to throw himself into these crazy situations. Whereas the new Lara is more about being like, she's been forced to shed her weaknesses and her vulnerabilities and privileges to become capable as a survivalist and a game protagonist, you know, which is absolutely a better idea as far as character story goes.
Mm-hmm.
Except that it's, like you say, it's not really handled that well. It's kind of unbelievable how quickly she's willing to learn those things.
It is. It's so quick, and it's the fact that she goes from and the yelping and the screeches just ended up getting on my nerves. It was this overplayed vulnerability. Mm. And it was, you know, that whole, you know, writer's 101, the sort of show don't tell.
Yeah.
And I just felt like we were being told all the time, look how weak Lara is. Look how she can hit every branch of a tree on the way down, not miss a single one.
Yeah.
And I was just like, okay, she's vulnerable because she goes ow when she gets hit.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, there's more to vulnerability than just that.
Absolutely. Yeah. The game just, it sort of does it just by having bad things happen to her all the time. And that's kind of all it does.
Yeah, exactly.
Go on.
And then it's just the fact that, okay, when the first time she shoots someone, you know, she's kind of shocked by it and everything. But then she quickly becomes this kind of gun-toting psycho.
Yeah, absolutely. And like in the context of the game, I thought that when I first played it, I thought that's a really great moment because of the game, like for the 5 or 10 minutes before that, it's clear that the game is kind of building you up for that moment. It's building her first kill, the first time she actually picks up a gun and, you know, shoots someone dead. Yeah. And in the context, she's absolutely forced to do it as well. She doesn't want to. She's given no other choice at all. It's that or die. And then there's the cutscene straight after where she sort of, you know, she's out of breath. She's like, oh, my God, I've just killed someone. Or, you know, she doesn't say that out loud. That would be very bad dialogue. Yeah. but she deals with the sort of the emotional fallout of just having killed someone. And then that cutscene is finished and the subplot is done.
Yeah, it is. It's like, that's that over. Yeah.
And then in game, she goes on an absolutely horrific killing spree. With, you know, literally hundreds and hundreds of people. And I appreciate that it's an action video game and that, you know, shooting is an essential part of the genre. I'm not saying it should have been redesigned to make it less desirable to kill people, which, you know, has been done in other games. But that's not what I was looking for in Tomb Raider. I'm looking for jumping about with two guns shooting things.
But
the issue is, and this is possibly the biggest problem I have with the new Tomb Raiders, is that you can't hang the personal story that they're trying to tell on the game that exists. The mechanics and the story just don't
go together. No, I mean, exactly. Yeah,
it's a problem in plenty of games, and it's kind of inherent to the idea of telling a character story where the character is mostly given agency by the player. But in Tomb Raider, it's particularly jarring because the story it's going for is, it's almost completely antithetical to the actual gameplay experience it delivers.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, it was really noticeable. It was one of the last levels, and she walks into this, it's a puzzle room where there's this giant bell, and the room is literally showered in body parts, and it's bright red with blood, and she just doesn't react at all.
No.
I mean, I was kind of like, wow, this room is just, it's a bloodbath. What is happening here? She doesn't say anything. It was just like, I was like, wow, she's cold. I mean, I always knew that Lara was kind of like a bit distant and cool, and she's kind of like the Hitchcock blonde.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I mean, wow, we've only been playing for a couple of, you know, in her.
And completely dead to the suffering.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, it was really jarring. So what about, Drake. Nathan Drew. So what about Nathan Drake?
Yeah, I mean, the Uncharted is less interested in setting up and progressing his character, because I think it sort of assumes that all the players are going to figure out who he's supposed to be fairly quickly, which you do. We all know these sort of particular action hero tropes fairly well. He's like adventurous, he's charismatic, he's irreverent, and you know, he's a wisecracker. And it's the same way you want.
He's every character Harrison Ford's ever played.
That's very much the next bullet point that I have. It's the same way that you watch like Guardians of the Galaxy, and you know from the beginning what kind of character Chris Pratt is playing with his Walkman, and he's sort of, you know, he's very relaxed and very. He and Drake are both sort of updated and less grizzly versions of Han Solo and Indiana Jones and Harrison Ford characters. So you spend 5 minutes or so with them and you're like, oh, okay, I know what this is. I can see what this game is going for. And if you're interested in that sort of, if you're interested in what it is going for, which I was and I still am, looking forward to the next one, then great, because Uncharted is, what, 10 hours of that, done really well with really high production values, and you're going to enjoy playing as Indiana Jones, basically.
Yeah, it's just like a charm offensive, and it charmed me, you know, it totally worked on me. I think it was like from the first scene on the boat in the first game, I was just like, okay, I really like this guy.
It's very easy to like him because it's you never thought.
Because you kind of want to be him. You're just like, yeah, he's cool. He gets to roam around the world and, you know.
That's definitely part of it. But it's also, I think, that he's, apart from the surface stuff, he's not particularly deeply defined as a character. Certainly until the third game, you don't really go into his backstory a lot. I'm not saying that he's just a
shallow.
I'm not saying he's shallow. I'm just saying that the game is not that interested in his depth. It's there for the surface performance that he gives that you can watch and be charmed by. It's the, you know, the one-liners,
But he does have, you know, sort of really anchored relationships with people.
Yeah.
With Scully. Scully's from X-Files.
Yep. We can talk about X-Files Sully. If you like. We can do that.
Yeah. With Sully and Elena, you know, those.
Yeah.
And even with, what's the other one? What's
Chloe?
The other one? Chloe, yeah.
Yeah.
She
starts in the second one, doesn't she?
Yeah, she's in the second one. But, you know, you get a sense, the first time you meet Nathan Drake, you get a sense, it is in media res.
Yeah.
You know, stuff is happening. This guy has been living beyond the beginning of this game, you know, which is what is so great about him, why you just invest in him immediately. It's like, you know, this is a guy who's lived a life. It's not a character that I'm just starting out with.
Yeah.
And you know, those relationships are cemented. You feel that there's history there, and you know, with Sully.
Yeah.
And then we see that grow with Elena. And so even though we don't know his past or the game's not interested in it, we know he has one.
Yeah, and
that there's one to discover, hopefully.
And now that we've seen where he's ended up, the journey doesn't necessarily matter so much. It is easier and better, I think, just to leave it to the player's imagination to think, oh, they must have had some adventures together. And going into that specifically is perhaps not so interesting as just leaving it as an assumed part of the backstory. And I know they do go into it a little bit in the third one. And to be fair, I think they handled it very well. And I really like those young Drake sections in Uncharted 3.
Yeah, I did. I think they handled young Drake better than they've handled young Lara.
Certainly. I mean, the original Tomb Raider games were the same thing. They started with her well into her Tomb Raiding career. You know, partly because it was, you know, the 90s, not everything had to be an origin story then. also because the games then still didn't do much in the way of focusing on character story. Outside of a few.
And that was almost part of her appeal, was she was this kind of enigmatic.
Absolutely. Sort
of solitary character that, you know, we were just kind of along for the ride with, you know. And I quite like that. I don't know if I want to know. I mean, I know more about Lara now and find that she's actually a bit boring.
I mean, if you watch like the marketing and I think some of the cutscenes in the original Tomb Raider, they are the personality they're giving her. It's just kind of, she's very cool. She's got, I think it's the first cutscene of Tomb Raider where she's wearing sunglasses she's climbing up that sort of icy peak and get into the cave, which ends up being the first level, and she gets to the top, she stands on top of a promontory or whatever it is and just takes the sunglasses off, and I can't remember what she does. Maybe she just throws them away, or maybe she puts them away, but
she's kind of a James Bond, isn't she?
Yeah, she is, absolutely.
That's kind of been eroded by this backstory, I feel. I just like, she's just not the character I thought she was. I know she's supposed to be growing into that, but I just didn't feel any element of that old Lara in this new Lara.
Fair enough. And I mean, I think it kind of depends whether you're talking about old Lara or old Lara, because the first reboot of Tomb Raider sort of, it's a middle ground. It's not her being completely inexperienced and terrible, but it's, not that she's terrible, I mean rubbish at surviving, but and it's not the original Tomb Raider, which is it's kind of an attempt to do a strong female character, but it's still very much mired in that in masculinity is the source of that. She's basically just very. She has, like, the sunglasses thing is a very masculine trait, if you know what I mean. The taking off the sunglasses, looking at that. Because we weren't really doing character stories in video games then to any sort of real, not character stories, but emotional stories in those games. I think the first reboot, the second sort of incarnation as Lara, I really like that. I think that is my favorite Tomb Raider series. I think it's better than the new ones because it still does. It's kind of got that Uncharted feel to it, and the Uncharted games themselves definitely take the mechanics that they take from Tomb Raider. They take them from that series. They don't take them from the originals, and they predate the new ones, so obviously they can do that.
Yeah.
But I think those middle games are the most similar to Uncharted, and I think they are the best Tomb Raider games.
Right, yeah. But those are the ones where she has the little sidekicks on radio.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I've forgotten about those.
Yeah. We were going to talk about sort of story and the tone of the two games.
Yeah.
I mean, they are completely different. I want to talk about a little bit about the sidekicks as well. I had a problem. I like the fact that Lara had some sidekicks, but I think they were just a bit underused. I don't know if she has any in Rise of the Tomb Raider or if she's solitary Lara.
She isn't in radio contact with anyone as far as I remember. She's mostly out on her own doing things. There are certainly characters that. Obviously, there are peripheral characters. She's not just out nowhere, just advancing.
Yeah.
There's a village of characters, and Jonah shows up again. I don't think they ever go on an adventure together, but he's always sort of in the background and in the periphery and part.
Okay, so she does have someone to kind of have dialogue with and things like that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, I mean, I did like that she had these buddies that went along with her. The only thing is they were just so tropey that, it's like Jonah, the Maori mystical native, Reyes, the angry black woman. Samantha was the sort of, soft, gentle Japanese girl and, just everything. And total save the princess trope.
Yeah.
And they had the mad scientist, just like, might as well throw one of those in.
Yep. Yeah, you're absolutely right. They're not particularly deep characters. I don't think that they necessarily have to be. They are kind of defined by stereotypes in some cases, but I think what they're focusing on is the type of relationship that Lara would have with that character. They're more interested in having this relationship and that relationship than necessarily this character or that character. So they don't really get fleshed out that way.
They were just sort of narrative, sort of gameplay tools, really, weren't they?
Yeah,
sort of.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And that definitely continues through Rise of the Tomb Raider. Not to spoil anything for you, if in case you're going to play it, but Jonah turns up and, he gets injured at one point and he becomes, that's his part of it.
He
gets
role.
Injured, and then Lara has to go and
save him.
It's a bit more complex than that, but he's just there to give her something to worry about.
I mean, Uncharted doesn't totally get away with it because it falls back on the magical native, the mystical native trope in every single game in 1, 2, and 3. The sort of, I really noticed it in the second one, was it were they in Tibet or Nepal?
Yes. Oh, and yeah, I remember.
The guy who just helps them for no reason whatsoever. It's like, why are these people helping them? Why don't they just like tell them to go away and leave their beautiful remote village alone? And no, you can't steal our treasures. And then it happened with Samir again in names in number 3.
Drake's Revenge. I've got the box here.
Thieves.
Drake's Deception. Oh god. Rubbish.
I've
never looked at that name before, but that's...
I have a totally forgettable name. Samir, the sort of Bedouin, whatever, you know, sort of Arab chief in the desert, you know, he
I mean,
would have
again,
been.
that is something that's in the source material, i.e., Indiana Jones. There's characters like Sala and I forget the other ones, but well, we've talked about this. I always.
Yeah, but they kind of, they've got a relationship with him, don't they? As opposed to just magically rescuing the stubbly white guy and helping him steal their treasure, their cultural.
Yeah, you are
It's like
absolutely right. And Rise of the Tomb Raider
so,
does that in large part as well. She
yeah.
stumbles across a village of natives who have been living there for, hundreds of whatevers of years,
Yeah.
and she's still the hero of everything. There's nobody
Yeah.
that says, we can probably take care of this whole thing. We've been doing this for years. They're resistant to
Yeah.
her coming in at first, but it's about 5 minutes into the game. It's 5 minutes into those relationships that they're like, oh, actually, you're pretty good
Okay.
at doing all this. Why don't we make you acting
Yeah.
chief,
Oh,
secret
God.
protector?
That's pretty bad.
Yeah.
'Cause, well, at least with the sort of Tibetan guy, he, you know, had sort of agency and knew his way and, you know, had skills and stuff. He wasn't just, yeah, just pointing, go up there to the top of the mountain and I'll just stay here grinding, I don't know, rice flour or something. You know, so but yeah, what about the tone of the games, because they are really different.
Yeah, oh yeah, I mean absolutely. I mean we've sort of talked about how Drake is much more willing to Drake and the player are much more willing to throw themselves into absurd, dangerous action situations. It's a much lighter sort of
Yeah.
take on it. It's you
It's more of a
have a
sort
bit
of
of
popcorn
fun with
movie.
this, yeah,
Yeah.
which is great, and it's why I like Uncharted so much, because you can just sit down and do
Yeah.
that for a while, and it's a really
Yeah.
fun environment to spend some time in. And
Yeah, it's kind of Indiana Jones versus the
you are right. The story then that the those that environment is built around in Uncharted, it's I mean, there's always some artifact at the end which turns out to be too powerful for anyone to have, so Drake either destroys it or puts it back where it came from. And actually, in the third game, he doesn't really have to do that, does he? It's at least one of them where all the bad guys get to the powerful artifact that they've been chasing the whole game, and it kind of just kills them, like in Raiders of the Lost Ark, or
Yeah, yeah.
they open Pandora's box and he
Yeah, I
Drake
think that's the
escapes and gets
third
to go
one.
home.
Yeah.
And Tomb Raider also, so that is the plot that it has. It has a magical MacGuffin which is there at the end of the game, or it must be protected, or
Yeah.
all this.
Stopped or, yeah,
And in
back.
Uncharted, that's fine, because it's just a fairly silly sort of action game, and I don't mean that in a pejorative way.
No.
But Tomb Raider again is trying to do this serious emotional journey thing, and it's kind of jarring, because the plot is so silly and the story is trying to take itself so seriously.
Yeah.
And
And then there's all this kind of, you know, but can this be real? And, you know, they're trying to do, I mean, you know, I did mention Scully earlier, you know, they're trying to do this X-Files thing, but within one character.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I know.
So she's Mulder and Scully in one, and then, you know, at the end, she's at the end of the first one, she's kind of like, oh, and then I realized that some of these things my father was talking about could actually be
How
real,
do
and I must now go forth unto the world. And, you know, it was all a bit like, oh, God,
I
really?
would genuinely love to play a Tomb Raider or Uncharted game where they get to the magical thing that they've been chasing the whole game, and then
And they just go and live happily ever
Oh no,
after in
that it just
Nirvana.
isn't magical. Oh, actually, this diorama, it didn't
Yeah.
mean anything. He was just talking rubbish, and this is just a cave with nothing in it. Oh, well,
Yeah.
it's been fun. I did enjoy the sort of the card game,
Yeah,
but
I'm gonna showcase down
I think we should
the
just shake hands and go home and agree never to talk about this to anyone.
Yeah,
Yeah.
that
And the other thing about that is that specifically in Rise of the Tomb Raider, the thrust of it, I think it's called the Divine Source or something, is the big MacGuffin, and it's an item that grants immortality or incredibly long life or something. And did you see the newest Star Trek film, Into Darkness?
Yes, is that the one with Cumberbatch?
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Now there's a scene in there which there's Dr. McCoy and he has a tribble, and he also has a syringe of Khan's blood. And he's doing experiments with it, and he looks out, and he says to one of the other characters, "Wow, this Khan's blood has amazing regenerative properties." And he injects it into a tribble, which was, you know, unhealthy or sick or dying, and now the tribble is thriving and it's growing really well. And watching that scene, you know, oh, I see, one of the characters is going to die later on and be revived by this blood.
It's Chekhov's gun.
Exactly. Well, Mr. Chekhov's in this case. but again, Rise of the Tomb Raider does that in that you've got this thing at the end which they're saying, oh, it grants eternal life. It's incredibly healthy and regenerative and brilliant. It's vitamin infinite or whatever it is. And then Jonah gets shot. And
oh, God.
You already know that he's going to be fine. Well, you've already told us that there is an item that exists that you haven't said
the neon sign.
It basically reverses death.
Yeah.
So you can't engage with that with that plot point. You can't think, oh, I better do this bit really well or Jonah will die.
Yeah.
You just think, oh, this is a bit more while I wait for them to bring out the artifact and rub it on Jonah's gunshot or whatever it is.
Yeah. And I have to say that I did play the Uncharted games kind of back-to-back over Christmas because I got them for a gift. And then I was like, well, I'm going to go back and finish Tomb Raider so that we can do this show and so I can just have a... I just found it... I didn't feel as much peril with Tomb Raider as I did with Uncharted. I just think they get the pacing and the sense of thrill. I think the directing is much more cinematic.
Absolutely. That's definitely more of a focus in Uncharted than Tomb Raider.
Yeah.
I don't think that's a point against Tomb Raider. I think they are trying to do different things.
But that Tomb Raider reboot is taking so much from Uncharted. You know, I mean, there's a real shift towards, you know, taking the Uncharted model and applying it to Tomb Raider with you know what we're calling the second reboot.
Yeah.
You know, with the sort of QTE sections and the you know all the vertical platforming sections, as I'm going to call it. You know, sort of climbing up the train, or Lara was doing, I don't know, up a wall and stuff was falling down.
The second reboot sort of did that first. So if the new Tomb Raider is taking anything from Uncharted, it's only taking back what Uncharted stole from it in the first place.
Yeah, okay.
I think stolen is a strong word. It's influence and, you know, perfectly creatively justified. I don't mean to accuse either game of plagiarism, but...
I just think Uncharted does those better.
Yeah, absolutely. But I don't...
Because I just didn't feel the same thrill. But they were trying to thrill in the same way. Otherwise, they wouldn't have done those.
I guess they would, but it's in the context of a game which has different stuff going on for it. Like you say, the Tomb Raider, at least the new Tomb Raider games are... They're more focused on collectibles. They're more focused on the idea of Lara as an archaeologist who is perhaps it's not implemented very well, but there's certainly stuff for her to find, and the game encourages you to look around and find all these interesting little items which you can then bring up in the 3D model viewer that it has, and Lara will have a comment on it. She might say something interesting about it. Uncharted has none of that. It drops little shiny things around. You just pick them up and...
go on your way and don't even read the thing.
The counter increments, and you might unlock something at the end of the game. But picking them up.
The impression I get is that a lot of people prefer Tomb Raider to Uncharted because I think people hate the sort of linear nature of Uncharted, that it is so on rails and they almost feel like it's not a game in some ways. And I personally love love it because the plotting is so tight, the pacing is so incredible, the set pieces are just, you know, it's just like total bling.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, it's like bling gaming, and I'm a complete movie nerd. It feels like playing a film. For the first time ever, I can actually say that that feels like playing a film.
I think that is very much deliberate. That is the effect that they've been going for since
and I think since they
started
And
the Naughty Dog have always been sort of good at doing that. It's the Last of Us is exactly that same thing. It's a bit more in depth, but
in a really different way. You know, so they can apply that cinematic sort of sensitivity to a really different tone of game. You know, we're not sort of like running over collapsing platforms and stuff in The Last of Us. It's much more kind of introverted, isn't it?
Absolutely.
So what was I going to say? I've forgotten. I've lost my point now. You say something. You say something interesting. I was just watching.
I know. I've run out as well.
It was something about gameplay. Oh, yeah. Lots of people prefer the Tomb Raider games because it's got that more open world feel, which for some reason the 21st century gaming industry or gamers are obsessed with everything being open world, and collecting stuff, and I mean, it was okay. You know, again, it was that kind of Assassin's Creed kind of model.
I mean,
just that map with loads of little things on it, and you know, and then you get more bits of map if you go in a tomb or whatever. And
yeah, absolutely. And that was something I do actually really like about it's been a while since I played Tomb Raider, but Rise of the Tomb Raider, I thought that did that very well. It sized its areas really well. It's three different basic you could equate them with acts of the game. You start in one big area, you move on to the next one, and move on to the next one. And they're sized well enough that they never feel so big, like in Assassin's Creed, that you think, oh, I'm never going to be able to explore this entire thing. I'll never clear everything, because I can't even see the horizon from this point. In all of these Tomb Raider levels, you can always sort of see the other end of the area from where you are. And it might be a bit different, but you can see everything that's going on in between those. And it's dense with collectibles. And all of those collectibles are useful in one way or another. And
I did kind of get into the... Because I was just like, oh, God, I'm collecting. I don't know what it was. Like crushing crates and stuff. And I was like, oh, and whatever. Yep. But if they do actually, by the end of the game, getting towards the last level, I was like, you know, I might actually crank out a few tombs to get a few more things, because I want that upgrade for my weapon, I want the scope for my rifle or whatever. And so I did quite like that.
Where it falls
slightly
short,
slower pace,
where I think it falls short, is that if you go back to the original Tomb Raiders, is that in the first Tomb Raider I played was Tomb Raider 2, and in the first level of that, it's fairly straightforward. It's got a route that it wants you to take. There's no map that you have. There's no you don't know where to look for secrets. Mm-hmm. But there are things in the environment that you could look at, and you think, oh, I could probably actually climb up on that if I
did. Yeah.
And if you follow those things, it leads you to interesting stuff, and you know, the secret collectibles. I think it's the gold skulls in Tomb Raider 2 or something like that, and it leads you to an area which is designed, and it's something that's exciting for you to find, but it's not marked out on anything. Whereas in Tomb Raider and Rise of the Tomb Raider, you find maps which you know, you unlock your map and it shows you where the tombs are. And I think in Tomb Raider and Rise of the Tomb Raider, there's something that's where it points you to secrets, and that's what they're called in the game. It's S, you know, capitalized. And it's not a secret if there's a map leading to it.
And there's a little bell rings when you're near a tomb.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's that whole thing with open world gaming and then just telling you where everything is. It's just like, well, kind of, what's the point of that? I mean, that was the great thing of the old Tomb Raider
Yeah,
games,
is it?
was that you spent your time like looking at every single nook and cranny. First of all, because it took you a while to learn what the actual ledges look like and
Yeah.
stuff like, oh, is that a wrinkle in the sort
Again,
of
it
polygons?
is sort of a product of the blocky level design that Tomb Raider
Yeah.
had, which you can see stuff which is which you wouldn't necessarily think to jump up there, but when you look at it and you say, oh, that's actually a
Yeah.
ledge. Whereas in the new
Yeah.
Tomb Raiders, anything that you can hang on is it's very visually
Signposted.
obvious that you can jump to it, or
Yeah.
you can even use Lara's Tomb Raidery instincts and it'll highlight the bits that you can grab
Yeah.
onto.
Yeah.
So
Yeah.
there's no room for actual secret things,
No, there isn't really.
which is a
Which
bit of a
it's kind
disappointment in
of.
a game which professes to be about exploration.
Yeah. But it's sort of a modern trend, isn't it? Sort of gaming trend is just to give you a shopping
Yeah.
list of stuff that is available here if you want to. If you so desire, you can go to
Yeah.
the mushroom department. Go shopping for mushrooms. I mean, the one thing I missed was, well, the fact that the tombs are optional in a game that's called Tomb Raider, I thought was a bit bizarre.
Yeah.
I know that she's not a Tomb Raider yet in the second one, she becomes a Tomb Raider or whatever, but
She
still,
sort of did. In the second one, they're still called optional challenge tombs.
are
Yeah, and
they?
when actually, when
Oh,
you get near them, a
that's
little pop-up says, oh, optional challenge tomb nearby, which took me out of the sort of environment.
yeah, immersion
Oh, it says
breaker.
there's an someone designed and left an optional challenge tomb underground in this in some
Yeah,
rich village, did
exactly.
they?
So yeah, I think that's a bit of a shame. And I think we could have pushed one block, just for fun, just as a little
Oh,
nod
no, I have too
to,
many bad memories of sliding block puddles. I never want to see another one.
just one time, just as a little gag, I thought would have been nice. Because we got the dual wielding pistol thing, on the very last level. I loved that. It was just like, it's like when you watch a Marvel movie and, they throw in something from one of the other heroes or whatever. It's just a little nod. And I thought that was cool. Oh, I thought Rise of the Tomb Raider, she was actually going to be in tombs,
I mean, to be fair, she does go through a few tombs.
I mean, call me literal, but that's a bit of a shame because, yeah, I loved the old Tomb Raider games. I spent a lot of time on them. I started with two as well and went back and played one and played them all until they got
So you'll know the bit
really
I'm talking
crap.
about in the first level. Then, where at the end of the first level, there's one path which you can take where it goes down into the ravine, which otherwise is something that you have to jump over or navigate over or fall in and die. But there's a route down to the bottom, and when you get down there, a Tyrannosaurus comes out of the cave, and you have to fight it. And that's
Oh,
just a really
yes.
cool little thing to not
That
be
is,
pointed out
yeah.
on the map. It
Yeah.
and they weren't. They weren't. They didn't feel so desperate for you to see it, as they do
No.
in the
Yeah,
film.
that's true, actually, that they built, they rendered a whole T-Rex
To
and
be
you.
fair, I think it might have been a reused model from the first Tomb Raider. But is it? I hadn't played the first Tomb Raider when I was 10 or 12 years old when I started playing these games, and it blew my mind when I got down there and there was a dinosaur down there.
Yeah, there were so many great moments in the
Oh
original
yeah.
Tomb Raider. The Hand of Midas was my favorite moment
Oh yeah,
ever.
I didn't see that until Anniversary, and that is
Okay.
still a terrifying moment when you
Where you
stand on it
took.
and
I know, but I just love that kind of connection with the developers, that the developers knew that that was what people would do. That's the first thing you do is like jump up onto the hand and you turn to God. And I just loved that. It was just a joyous, one of the greatest gaming moments I've ever had. I loved it. It was just like, yeah, I did what you expected me to do. I thought that
You predicted me
was great.
perfect.
Yeah, exactly. And I loved that. I think Well, we should have probably told people this is going to be like a double triple bill because we had so much to talk about.
I don't think we expected this to be quite as long as it.
We did no, but you did mention about sliding down to your death. That was one of the things. Lara always had kind of hairy death sequences when she used to walk off the edge of things, which she doesn't do anymore.
She used to crumble into a quite horrible looking heap when she hit.
Yeah, and we'd hear her bones break. And you'd usually go, "Certy right for walking off that ledge I didn't tell you to walk off." But I did object to the sort of, I call it, sort of Lara death porn.
Yeah.
I mean, the deaths were extremely unnecessarily graphic, I thought.
This was definitely a complaint that a lot of people had. The one that I always remember is that if you mess up on the sort of river sliding section, you get the thing that goes through her neck. And
goes through her throat.
And it focuses on her face while that's happening.
It's totally unnecessary.
I'm not sure I agree. I mean, it's unnecessary in as much as anything is unnecessary, but I actually really sort of quite enjoyed those moments because they did make me sort of recoil a little bit. I was like, oh my God. And, you know.
Yeah, but she could have just been skewered through her stomach or something. Skewered through her.
She could.
Right, you know, it's just. I just felt it was, you know, a little bit lascivious kind of. Look how many glorious ways we can kill Lara, this kind of,
I mean,
you know, she is a sort of sexy game icon. I just don't think Nathan Drake, not just because, you know, it's a Naughty Dog game and they're slightly more classy, wouldn't get that treatment.
No, I suppose he wouldn't.
You know, this sort of like pornification of her death.
But again,
I just thought it was unnecessary.
The themes that they're going for, they want her to be more vulnerable. They want to show you that she is weaker and that she could be killed in horrible ways at any point. And when it does happen in the game, I was actually shocked by it. And I thought, it wasn't something that I then wanted to look at again. I'm not sure that I buy that it's supposed to be pornographic in that sense. It just makes you sort of go, oh my God. And I love it when a game can induce that reaction in me, even if it is kind of, it's a cheap way of doing it, because, you know, shove a spike through anyone's neck and I'm gonna freak out a little bit, but when it does happen and I have to sort of recompose myself a little bit before playing again, I always like when a game like that can induce a physical stress response, you know.
Yeah, I just feel that the ways they did it, that they were done because she's a female character. That's what I felt. That was my reaction to it.
I mean, have you got any specific examples of something that made you feel that?
Yeah, it was the skewer through the neck. Specifically, was just like, but it's like that was totally unnecessary.
It
could have been through her chest, it could have been through her stomach, which is but actually more likely to get skewered.
There was a lot of there was a lot of stuff that got thrust through her. That happens. I can't sort of argue with that. I think Rise does that a little bit better. It doesn't do much of that stuff, but there is still stuff where she dies in quite a shocking and horrible way.
But that's kind of an old Tomb Raider trope.
Yeah, exactly. And I think when the theme of the game is, you know, there's that bit in Temple of Doom where the guy gets his robes caught in the crushing in the roller, and he goes under the roller, you know, the bit, and he gets squashed flat. And that's a really sort of gross way to die. So I think, and it does happen in all the other Indiana Jones films have that as well. There's always people who die horribly, and it's not the protagonist because it's not a video game. You can't just bring him back to life. But
yeah.
I think violent, gory, horrible deaths, and there's lots of crushing deaths in Tomb Raider as well. I think that is something that is legitimately part of the genre. But
I'm not. It's just the deaths they chose.
Yeah, all right. I think you're absolutely right. Although. I did just think that the spike through the neck thing was I liked it. I thought it was good.
A bit gleeful,
All right.
gleefully gory.
It was gleeful, yeah, and it was a bit, yeah, it was voyeuristic in the way that the camera moved and the camera focused on it. But it's still one of the moments that I remember most from the game.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know if that says something about Tomb Raider, but
Or whether it's a yeah, or whether it says something about me.
yeah. So, I think we're done.
Yeah, I think we're
I mean, I probably could talk about it for another half an hour, but people might get bored.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, we gosh, we have we've definitely I think this is the longest one we've done by quite a factor, isn't it?
Yeah, a long, long way. So I don't think we're going to do them this long. We might do them a little bit longer than the usual 15 minutes, but I definitely don't want to have hour long
No.
shows as a regular thing.
I agree.
So that's it.
Oh.
Tomb Raider versus Uncharted.
Yeah,
We're
I
going to do
there's a
the
lot of Tomb Raider
one or the
movies.
other. Which one do you pick over the other, or are
Oh
we
God, I
going
don't think that I could. No, that's a lie. I'd probably pick Uncharted if we were on Desert Island Video Games, and I had my choice, it would be one of the Uncharted games just because they're a bit more fun. But I do love Tomb Raider as this just as an entire
Yeah,
series, and I
I
always
do.
say I think it deserves a lot more respect than it gets for a game that has done 11 entries now, including reboots, and has only
Yeah,
really
I
had
think it
one
gets a
bad
lot of
game.
respect. But I think there's big expectations as well. People have loved those games for so long that they're like, I want it to blow my socks off again like it did in
Absolutely,
1996.
but I don't think that the new Tomb Raider games sort of get considered part of the new sort of AAA pantheon. They're never the massive game that's coming out this year. Like that's always well, it's not Uncharted. It's stuff like The Last of Us. It's stuff.
Well, not when you release it the same day as Fallout
Yeah,
4.
okay, that was probably probably a move, and
Microsoft.
only on the one console. Yeah,
Yeah,
so yeah.
weird decision there, Microsoft. But so hopefully it'll get a big splash at Christmas on PlayStation.
Hopefully, and
Yeah, which will give it a sort of second lease a rise. I'm certainly going to pick it up.
yeah, and I mean if.
I like Lara still. As much as, I do love Uncharted, and if I was given the choice, I'd go for Uncharted because it's just pure joy.
Yeah,
And
I mean, Uncharted is the
usually
one that
I'm
I'm going to
grumbling
replay.
about things I don't like in games, and Uncharted, I just like was smiling all the way
Yeah,
through.
absolutely. Yeah, I know what you mean.
Right, we've got to wrap this
Yeah,
up.
we
We're
have.
waffling
We
now.
had a bit of a misfire on the wrap up there.
Yeah, we have well and truly argued the toss. So let us know your thoughts. Hashtag argue the toss on Twitter or leave us a comment. We've now got an argue the toss playlist on YouTube, so you can add that to your playlists and never miss a single second of me and Drew. So cheers, Drew.
Cheers.
And see you next time.
Excellent.